You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I hope you're staying cool in the various parts of the country that are really hot right now. My guest today is Dr. Megan Stubbs, a sexologist, relationship expert, and body image specialist. With her degrees in biology and human sexuality, she's able to combine two of her favorite things, science and sex, into a cohesive platform to impact her audience. She's mindful of inclusion and brings a sensitivity to ethnic diversity rooted in her own complex heritage. She believes that sex should be fun and uses her lighthearted, intelligent, and humorous delivery to make that happen. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Megan.
Thank you, Tristan. Thanks for having me.
You know, I think a question that I get asked a lot and that people want to know a lot is how one becomes a sex educator, a sexologist. People are very interested in this sort of origin story. So do you want to share yours?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I get this question really frequently. And so it depends on the setting. So if this was like a party setting, I'd probably say, well, I've had a lot of sex. So that's what qualifies me. You have to hit that 1,000 partner mark, and then you're in.
Yeah, and then you get your card in the mail.
Yes. Yeah. but for the podcast, I was always that friend you went to for sex advice, and that carried on through my middle school years, high school years, and college years. But all the while, I was still like learning a conventional education, you know. And so it's like, okay, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I was like, well, I'm super good at science, so I'll go to school to be a medical doctor. And so I went to my undergraduate school and I had big dreams of being, you know, a medical doctor, and I was pre-med emphasis. I had a biology degree I was going for a biology degree. And I realized that that wasn't going to happen because I couldn't do chemistry. And I was like, oh crap, what am I going to do now? Because I'm still super good at like life sciences, but like, I guess I can work for the DNR and like ask people how long their fish are and cut open deer skulls and stuff. But I was going to figure it out later. And it wasn't until I was reading Cosmo that I was like, and I saw the word sexologist and I was like, wait a second, is that even a real job? Because that was not seen on Career Day. And so I Googled at the time, you know, graduate degree in sexology, and I found my grad school and I was like, okay, this seems like a good fit. And ultimately it was.
Why do you think you were the friend that everyone went to? I mean, as early as middle school, that's impressive.
Yeah, I just think because I had a wealth of knowledge. Like, I have so many books on like puberty and changing bodies. And so I was just like thirsting for all of this knowledge. And I had all the books because my mom was like, anything you want to buy in the bookstore? And I was like, sweet. So I'd always be in that section, like, yeah, more puberty books. Who knew? So, and I was just like, you know, open about it. And I feel like my friends felt I was comfortable enough to approach about sex stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is your first book, yes?
Yes.
And why? So often people kind of, you know, say, okay, if you could write a book about what would it be? So why this book?
Well, the first book I pitched was a food and sex cookbook, but they were like, it's not the time. And I'm still like, okay, maybe it's not the time for this book yet. But I was like,
one book like that. It's called, God, it's very old. It's probably 15 years old. It had pictures, and maybe it was called Aphrodisiacs, and it was food, and it was like, it was about how to make sexy, you know, desire filled, passion boosting food.
Yeah, that's kind of like my book. I was like, how can I combine my love of cooking and tie it into sex? So they weren't on board with that yet. So that's still on the back burner. But for this book, I was like, I'm an aspiring author. You know, do you have any topics you'd like someone new to take a whack at? And they were like, well, we kind of have this like idea about a single sexuality book. And I was like, wait, go on, because I'm super single and I'm a sexologist. So maybe that would be a fun, like, angle to come from. And I wrote a sample chapter for them and they loved it. And so I was in.
So the book is called, for people, I'm sorry, I didn't say it, Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness. It's from Cleus Press. And, you know, one of the things that struck me right off the bat about this book is it's one of those books I wish I had when I was younger, right? You know what I mean? Like, especially for people kind of starting out and kind of coming into their own sexuality and their identity. I do realize that a lot of sex-focused books are sort of defer to or assume you're in a couple, you want to be in a couple, like that's where you're headed. And so this really challenges a big norm in our society, which is that if you're single, you don't want to be single.
Yeah. I call it the Scarlet S. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, one of the few books out there that does put singledom as a like valid relationship status, where it's not like I'm just single until, or I'm hoping to not be single and then get partnered later on. This one's just helping you live your best life while you're single, because you don't know, you can't change your single status without another person. So in the meantime, what are you going to do? Hopefully live your best life.
Right. And not make that time a sort of like in between time. Yeah. And also I feel like more people, I mean, at least anecdotally, like more people I know are claiming that identity, right? That actually like partnering with someone is not a priority for them. Is not their like so-called lifestyle, like is not how they want to live their life, right?
For sure.
And so we need kind of more models and guides, as it were, to this kind of life that isn't really celebrated necessarily or represented even in the media.
For sure, yeah. Any kind of like popular movie or television show, it's always about someone in a couple or a single person who finds someone and now they're partnered and their happy life. But where do we see someone who's just like single throughout the whole storyline?
Right.
But it's still a complete person.
And is single and happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things I like about this is that you really advocate setting personal goals for yourself. That's why this book is kind of like, it's about singledom, but maybe everyone could read it.
That's what I tell people. I say,
you know what I mean? It's like there's tools in here for people to kind of self-actualize and have a relationship with yourself that you then could also have a relationship with someone else. But it's absolutely about the relationship with self, which isn't really something we, as in the sort of mainstream world, really cover.
Yeah, it's always about being selfless, doing for others, you know, lighting up their candle or pouring from your cup. And it's like, we got to reframe it. It's not you being selfish. It's you trying to create and manifest everything you want to have as a single person. And then if you're with someone else, hey, bonus. But it's not like you're going about thinking you're lacking something.
Right, right. And that's why I think that this is a radical departure from a lot of sort of self-help stuff, which can be so focused on relationships. And obviously, like, we're social creatures and we have relationships, but this is a kind of like, let's sit down and think about just me.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think especially people assigned female at birth and other marginalized folks, really are not given the space to do, are not ever told to do.
Yeah. It's like, if this is permission giving, because it almost seems taboo to do that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we, again, like you said, we're kind of taught about giving and selflessness, and we're never sort of encouraged to just think about ourselves and kind of what we want. You know, it makes me think of the people who, when I teach and I say like, hey, you just have to tell people what you want. There's a segment of that audience always that says, what if I don't know what I want?
Yeah. You've never
allowed your mind. Where should those people kind of start, do you think?
I think it's as easy as just taking a piece of paper and just going wild, you know, as wild of a dream as like, I'm going to live on an island in the middle of the Maldives, you know, go that big. And then maybe as you're, you know, tapering it back down, little things of like, hey, maybe I want to pick up reading paper books again, or maybe I want to try this cooking class, or maybe I want to like paint my room a different color. You know, give yourself permission to just explore and just see wherever your mind goes. Go on social media, go on Pinterest, look for inspiration and say, hey, is that thing I'm seeing that brings me joy something I can incorporate into my life? And just start there. If you have it written down, it might help you stick with it more. Maybe the island in the Maldives isn't going to happen, but you can absolutely do things like change your room, change your sheets. Oh, buy nice sheets. Don't skimp on your crappy sheet. Like, no,
oh,
get nice
God.
Sheets.
Please get nice sheets. You're totally worth it. And the amount of time you spend with your sheets is more than like you wear jewelry, for example.
Yeah.
So get nice sheets, people. I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah. So just start small and just dream and just think about what you could incorporate into your life. And maybe some things never happen. That's okay. This is a whole journey. It's not like a one-time thing of like, I got to write down all the things I want right now. Oh, what if I can't think of everything? This is an ongoing process.
One of the things that you bring up in the book, which I think is really important and is super timely here during COVID. I don't know what we're calling this phase of COVID, but this could be the 10th wave. I don't know what it is, but it appears that we are going to go back into some social distancing and potentially some lockdown because of the rates of cases are going up in all 50 states. So the thing that you talk about in the book is something called skin hunger. And let's just define that for the audience.
Yes, this is you craving physical touch to feed those sensations of being comforted or cared for or close and like bonding with someone else.
And so lots of people have experienced skin hunger during COVID, during the pandemic. And one of the things I like is that you really validate that like we need touch. And so your desire for touch is completely valid. But what are some of the ways that you suggest that people address a kind of need for touch if they don't have necessarily a sexual partner or a regular sexual partner?
Yeah, you can already key in on those relationships you already have. So whether it's a family member or a close friend, just say, hey, I need a hug. Is that okay? You know, don't just go up to your friend and just, you know, bear hug them. Or when you're doing a hug, say, hey, can we do a good like 10 second, 20 second hug? You can use your pets. You can even use a pillow. You know, your mind doesn't know it's not real. So any way you can like self-soothe, especially if you're in your bed with your nice sheets. And depending on lockdown too, there are professional cuddlers, but I don't think they're going to be open to going to people's houses during lockdown.
Cuddling right now. Yes.
Yeah.
But cuddle parties are a real thing. And when the world is open again, you guys can Google that.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, so don't overlook the things you already have within your sphere of accessibility.
Because that touch doesn't need to be sexual.
Right. Yeah. This can be platonic 100%. Like who doesn't love just a friend hug? Like, oh, it's so nice.
Yeah. Or just, I love holding my friend's hands. You know, I like cuddling and canoodling with them.
Yeah.
Just certain friends of mine, like I have that kind of physical relationship with.
For sure.
And it's not sexual. It's just, like you said, it's very comforting.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take our very first break and hear from our fantastic sponsors who we love. Thank you, sponsors. We'll take a break. Coming up, we will talk more with Megan about being single and being fierce and amazing and, you know, charting the rest of your life. So stay with us. Support for this episode is provided by Dipsy. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. They even have bedtime stories to help you gently unwind. I love words. I love stories. I love fantasies. That's what really gets me going. My own desire over the years has gotten less spontaneous and more responsive. So I love something I can use to get me going. People telling stories right in my ears. There's really nothing better than that. Each Dipsy audio stories features characters that feel like real people and immersive scenarios so you feel like you're right there. For listeners of Sex Out Loud, Dipsy is offering a 30-day extended free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. You've got to listen. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Dr. Megan Stubbs, the author of the new book, Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness from Cleus Press. So Megan, how do you see the sort of state of singledom in America changing right now? I mean, you know, we can see the statistics, like marriage rates in the 50s were sort of out of control. It was something like 90% of people in the 50s were married, which is seems bonkers today. Mm-hmm. But have you seen a sort of shift in how people are relating to each other, getting in relationships, building their lives?
Yeah, for sure. Going back to your 50s comment, I think the rates were so high because society wasn't ready or accepting of people, women, going out of the family and just living on their own. Like, what? No, where's your husband? What are you doing? You should be at home having kids. And so fast forward to 2021 now, I think society is more accepting of people living independently outside of their family and not being in a relationship. And also letting people decide what they want to have as far as relationships goes, whether that is a partnered relationship or maybe that's an open relationship, a poly relationship, or someone who just wants to be single. I think the opportunity is more vast and accepted these days.
Yeah, I mean, we're even seeing, you know, there are folks who are single and parenting and who never had a partner to begin with. In other words, they've become pregnant in some other non-traditional way, alternative way. And we can even see celebrities who've done that, who are single and who have kids and who are parents. And so I think there's sort of more role models for us now for that.
Yeah, people are redefining what it means to be a parent or someone who's a happy, successful adult. You don't have to have the partner, the white picket fence, the, you know, golden retriever and the house. You know, it can be a, you know, vast departure from what that is. Not saying you can't have that, but it's not the way, it's a way.
So a thread running throughout your book, which I think of course has to be addressed, is once you do start to spend some time thinking about you, yourself, and having a relationship with yourself, for a lot of people, some negative shit comes up. I mean, we live in this fat phobic, body shaming, impossible beauty standards society. And so if you stop and start to think about your own relationship with your body, I think a lot of people have like recordings going on in their head that are pretty negative.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the easiest ways to stop doing that is to notice when you're doing that. Not saying it's never going to come again. Once you say like, oh, I said that, you know, in my mind it was bad. Don't do it again. It's probably going to come up again. But once it does come up, acknowledge it and say, why do I feel this way? So think about the media you're consuming, maybe the air quotes innocuous comments your friends or family make. Look at your social media. What are you reinforcing in your mind? So once you've got that kind of like, okay, I'm aware of this now, curate your social media, follow diverse accounts. You don't have to just follow one type of account, you know, really go through and say like, why am I only looking at this kind of body type? Like, why don't I look at more vast and varied, you know, differences? And then when your friends or family members make comments, say something, be like, hey, that's not nice. Or that's not kind. Or like, that's not helping me in my life. And then obviously they'll probably be like taken aback. Like, I didn't mean it like that. Well, now we have a conversation.
Right. I mean, it is still acceptable in America to make fat jokes and to criticize people about their bodies openly. People don't do it sort of in the shadows or in the whispers. They're right out there doing it. And I think it's hard. I think this is like one of the number one things that people talk to me about is just this level of acceptance and self-love. I mean, what are some of your strategies to help people get to that place?
Helping them get to a place where they're accepting and coming from a place of gratitude. I like to have people think about all the things they like to do. So whether that's you like to garden or you like to go shopping, be grateful for your legs that are able to bend down and help you weed, or your arms to help you carry these bags. You know, think about fun memories you've had when you're like out laughing with your friends. Are your friends with you because you're a certain body size or because they like you for who you are? So don't cut, you know, try to cut yourself down into like different parts. And just realize that you are such a whole person already, and you're deserving of having pleasure, your desires met, a relationship, and being treated with respect right now, not once you get to a certain weight level or size. Like, you're valid and worthy right now. Don't feed into the things that are coming at you where it's ads of like, oh, try these pills for 2 weeks and you're going to lose 1,000 pounds or something. You know, whenever someone's trying to make you question your body, say, who's profiting off of this? They're profiting off your insecurity. So if you're not insecure anymore, they can't profit off of you. But it starts slow and it's a journey. Again, you don't just do it, you know, this exercise for 2 weeks and then you'll be loving your body. Because some days you'll wake up and be like, oh, gross. Like, this isn't good. And that's okay. We're human. But as long as you know you're worthy, you can have those feelings because we're only human. So feel the feelings, but know, moreover, everything's okay and you're good.
I like to notice those moments also. Like, I had a moment this morning where I looked down and I was like, I really like my thighs today.
Yeah.
And it was like the strangest little like random thing. I'm just like walking in the hallway. I like my thighs today. And so I want that to like ring in my head throughout the day that I like my thighs. I like that they get me places. And I actually like how they look today. Also, just to be fair, I'm in my underwear. I should say that, right? Hey, awesome. It's still COVID and I'm doing work in a t-shirt and my underwear. So I can look at my whole thighs is what I'm saying all day.
Yeah, and that's great. And maybe it starts with something small, like you like your eyes. You don't have to like everything all at once. And there may be some things that you don't like ever. That's okay. But just know you are a whole person who is more than a shape and a weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you've got a whole chapter on body mapping.
Yes.
There's a lot of, I mean, I just wanted to say to people, there's a lot of good embodied stuff in this book. It is heady and smart, but also there's a lot about the body, which I think we need more and more of in this world. Because many of us are not in our bodies or can't be in our bodies for a variety of reasons. So let's talk about body mapping, what it is, how it works.
Yeah, this is you just doing a full body assessment of different parts of your, well, the whole body, but exploring what kind of touch you may like, whether you like, you know, some fingertips or some nails. Maybe there's areas of your body you don't like touch. So you're making a map of hot spots and maybe we avoid these spots. And so this is really great for you, especially if you're on a self-pleasure journey and maybe this is like something completely foreign to you. This is a really great place to start to know where you want to focus in on. And maybe you're like, I just can't make anything happen at the back of my knee. I'm trying, but it's just not working. When you body map, now you'll know.
Right, right. And then you have an idea also, just, I mean, I think sometimes when I've done kind of exercises where you're mapping the body in that like first start and pay attention to your toes and then move on to your feet, you know, that kind of like for a meditation or a mindfulness exercise, I begin to realize like there's parts of my body that hurt that I didn't realize hurt before I started that. And there's parts of my body that feel really sensitive. But again, if I don't sort of check in constantly with my body, I can kind of operate from the neck up a lot, right? And sort of stay in my head.
For sure. And then unless you're like in the sex field, what other air quotes civilian would have ever considered like, hey, how do my calves feel? How do your knees feel? How does my upper arm feel? Like, I'm not thinking about that. Like, that's wild. So once you start doing it, it might be awkward, but it gets better and better the more you do it.
Yeah. It's an interesting mindfulness exercise also, because you start to just really key in and pay attention and maybe shut off your brain a little bit as you kind of focus on these different parts of the body.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is, tell us what sensate focus is, which is part of this.
Yes, this is a practice from Masters and Johnson. They are pioneers in our field, and they created this activity for couples, but I think you can do it on your own too, where you are just touching and exploring, not for like orgasm, pleasure, end goal. You're just exploring for curiosity and seeing what feels good. So this is you just playing around and saying, hey, what does it feel like if I take my fingernails up and down my neck? How does that feel? And just getting curious about your body and seeing how different sensations feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is true. This can be not sexual, and it also could be sexual. I feel like there's still people who aren't necessarily centering pleasure and masturbation in their lives for a variety of reasons. I mean, first of all, we're going too fast. But now we have some time. We're going too fast. We're too busy. We're overscheduled. All that stuff, and we're exhausted. And for some people, masturbation can be triggering or can be painful or is not a healing space, yet. But making that kind of time, it's really like a date with yourself, is hard for people.
Yeah. This practice is like, I want to say like no pressure, like there's no expectation. So if you are someone who is feeling like you're not in touch with your body or you don't really enjoy masturbation, it's not a comforting thing to you, there's no expectation of an outcome. You're just doing this to feel and be really present in the moment.
Yeah. And I think I say it to people over and over and over again, but like you have a sexual relationship with yourself that also needs to be fed and nurtured. Right. Yeah. We talk a lot mm-hmm. about feeding and nurturing our relationships with other people, but this is a relationship you're going to have until you're gone and you can actually make time for it.
Yeah. I mean, even just giving yourself the permission to allocate time to this is big. That's a really big first step. So if you're doing that and anything else that goes on beyond that isn't great, that's okay. You took the first step. You're going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we are going to take another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about sex, people. I mean, you know, we are. And because Megan talks about it in such amazing ways. So stay tuned, more with Dr. Megan Stubbs when we get back. I've got a question for you. What's better than a toe-curling, eyes-in-the-back-of-your-head orgasm? Well, there are a few things like world peace, but for our purposes, let's just focus on that orgasm and toned pelvic floor muscles. Intensity by Pormois helps strengthen all your orgasms by exercising those pelvic floor muscles. Pormois means for me, and people, you deserve this. If the eyes are the window to your soul, then your pelvic floor muscles are the gateway to pleasure. Kegel exercises, which work out the pelvic floor, have been scientifically proven to strengthen your orgasms. They can also help in bladder control and enhance your sensations during sex. And doing your Kegels is for people with vaginas of all ages. Pormois is offering our listeners an additional $25 off of Intensity when you go to pormois.com and enter code Tristan at checkout. You can use this code along with any code on their website. So that's $25 off on top of any other promotion when you go to POURMOI.com and use promo code Tristan. POURMOI, POURMOI.com with the code Tristan. Intensity by POURMOI, Kegels with a kick. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. The book is called Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness. And it's from Dr. Megan Stubbs, who is a sexologist, relationship expert, and body image specialist. So you have one of the best titles of chapter ever. And I read a lot of books, Megan, a lot of books. There is a chapter in your book called Empowered Sex with Near Strangers. Okay, what I love about this is in terms of cultural norms, this is a paradox. This is sort of a contradiction, right? We have these ideas about sex with strangers as being, well, it can be pathologized. It can mean you're a bad person, you're a slut, you have commitment issues. I mean, there's all this stuff wrapped into it. And then also this idea of one night stands being a kind of a dirty thing or a thing you regret or a thing that you walk home from and feel shame and guilt about. So the idea of putting like empowered sex with near strangers all in one phrase is really exploding all of those ideas we have about, let's just put in quotes, casual or stranger or one-time sex with people. But you are all for it. And you've like ready to give us a guide of how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, even without naming it, if we even go back 50 years, it's been happening. This is nothing new. We're just, you know, framing it in a sense of like, and we're pulling it out into the light. Listen, this goes on. It's not going to stop going on. So why not just have the best experience we can while we're doing it?
But how do we do that? I mean, you know, one of the things that I think is challenging is that when you have a lover that you've had for a while, they get to know your body. Hopefully, they get to know your body, and you get to know their body, and so you can sort of build on these experiences. And when you're faced with someone brand new, there's a learning curve, but we don't have that much time. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you have all night, but
yeah. Yeah, so this is later on in the book. So hopefully if you've read it chronologically, you'll have done the pre-work already. So the practices of mapping your body and knowing what places you like and what places you don't like touch is super important. You can communicate that to your partner, say, hey, I love it when you do X, Y, and Z, but I'd prefer if you didn't touch A, B, and C because those aren't areas for me right now. And they'll say, oh my God, cool, awesome. Or you can ask them, what do you like? And so you can have a dialogue of discussing what things you both like. I also have a yes, no, maybe list in the book. So that can be a fun assessment to take by yourself or with your partner to discover what kind of activities would you want to do together. It's not like we see in the movies where it's like two strangers at a bar meet, they lock eyes, then they're in some like hallway being slammed up against the wall and they just have amazing sex. Like I've never, ever had sex like that with a stranger. So you got to have some conversation going on in there.
Now, I know people who have trouble talking with their long-term partners during sex. So how do people get over this real intense fear and anxiety I think people have about talking, right? Because I love the picture you've painted, and I'm ready to drop into it and talk my little head off and listen also. But I know people are... We're not taught how to talk about sex. And I know people have that image of the hallway in their mind. How do we get over our fears about talking, especially to someone who is a stranger?
A near stranger. You can have this conversation in your head. You can write this down as like a little dialogue. You can have a conversation with yourself in the mirror where you've practiced saying these words, where you're like, hey, I love this. I need to have barrier methods in place because that makes me feel safer for sex. So once you practice on yourself and you can, you know, have said the words in a sentence completely, call up a friend and be like, hey, let me lay some lines on you just in case. When I go on the prowl tonight, I might meet someone. And your friend will say, lay it on me, if they're a good friend.
if they're a good friend, yes.
Yeah. So once you've had these conversations, hopefully you've done the trial run, it'll hopefully come out smoother. Even if you haven't, it's so important to get it out, especially if we're talking about safer sex practices. You have to be comfortable enough to say what is right for you. So practice at home, write it down, and then be empowered enough to be like, hey, listen, you're super cool. I can't wait to touch your parts, but let's go over some ground rules first.
No, that's a really good point too about safer sex. It's like there are two or more conversations that sort of have to happen. And one is about health and safety and boundaries. And the other is about yes, no, maybe with whatever you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
And I still find people are really challenged to try to negotiate that or talk about that, especially with a near stranger. But it's really important. And I think the other thing is you can always default to, here are my safer sex practices, right? What are yours? And then someone can get on board or they can't. And then that's like information that you have.
For sure. Yeah.
What if you're a talker, you feel like you can express yourself, you feel like you've done your homework and you have a little script in your head, and the person you're with isn't, or it's hard to draw them out, or they aren't forthcoming. Or when you say like, what do you like? They say everything, anything, that kind of, how do you, again, in a short period of time, like develop, for lack of a better word, like a rapport?
Yeah. I think you can communicate as best you can and try to draw out some answers from them. And if you still can't, maybe, you know, take things slow and then just do constant check-ins with them, because they may say they like everything, but then suddenly you're sucking on their ear and they're really checked out. Their body's shut down. You've noticed something and you're like, hey, is this okay? And you're like, actually, no, I hate my ear being sucked on. Like, okay, cool. Thank you. I'm glad I know this now. Now we can move on to something else. So even if you have really great communication with this near stranger partner, always having check-ins built into your encounters is super important. Check in with them verbally, check in with their body cues, and then also just check in anyway, just to be like, hey, do you like this? Do you like when I blank your blank? And they'll hopefully say yes, or like, no, let's try something else.
Right. I mean, I just want everyone in general to be talking more during sex. I mean, it's my like one wish before I leave the planet. Please just talk to each other, because there's too many people having sex in silence, and it's just never going to be as good as sex that you can talk about and negotiate and go back and forth.
100%.
So one of the things I know you do is you speak on a lot of college campuses.
Yeah.
And I know we all haven't traveled all that much in the past year, but I'm wondering if you have a sense of like what is happening in the next generation of sexual beings. What are they talking about? What are they worried about? What are they asking about? What don't they know? I mean, I want to sort of paint a picture. I want answers to all those questions.
Okay. moreover, they're very thoughtful. I'm really heartened by the questions I get asked, because of course there are some troll questions like, how many people do you have sex with? And I'm like, 1,000. I told you that. I have my card. But, you know, they're curious about pleasure. How do I know if I'm pleasing my partner? You know, they're curious about relationships. Like, what if I want to be with two other people? Does that make me a bad person? Does that mean I'm cheating? And it's like, no, there's a whole other world of, you know, consensual non-monogamy out there. A lot of men have asked me about, you know, receptive anal play, and does that make them gay? And I'm like, oh my God, no, buttholes are great for everyone. Like, that's okay. You know, they just have a curiosity about things that they're not getting, that I know they're not getting in high school, because I'm speaking to college people. So they're maybe moved away from their small hometown. Now there's this big university and they're interested in people, but they're like, you know, I didn't get this education back then, so I'm really curious about how to go about this the right way. So they're very thoughtful and curious, which I really, really love.
And do you feel like from everyone you've talked to, there's still a pleasure and orgasm gap between men and women or people of different genders?
I'd say we still have a gap, whether that is due to them not speaking up or not being confident in their skills or just not knowing that this isn't the norm. I still think we have work to do in that area, but I'm hopeful that it's getting better, both for me speaking on campuses and then having a lot of access to sex education on social media platforms because they're not getting in school. They're turning to social media.
What do you think people are worried about when it comes to sex? Like college students, this sort of next generation.
I think they're worried about not being, air quotes, normal. Like, I like this. Does that mean I'm abnormal? They want to fit in, whether that is, you know, socially, culturally, they want to fit in sexually too. But I think exposing them to the rainbow of everything that sexuality can be, I hope, makes them feel more empowered and okay in their decisions and what they want to do with their body.
Do you feel like over the years you've noticed that people have more knowledge? I'm always amazed when I go somewhere and someone is still like, I don't understand how the clitoris works. And I'm like, okay, again, total lack of sex education in high school. And then here you are, you're a freshman. And of course, like no one ever told you or even showed you a book or a YouTube video. So of course you don't know. Do you feel like kids know more these days than they used to?
I feel like they know more in like certain areas. Like they know more about gender identity now. Mm-hmm. And they know more about, you know, being in a monogamous relationship isn't the only way to be. But if we get back to maybe like more of the foundational things of like, yes, you can get pregnant while you're still on your period because it's your egg is still around, you know, it lasts for like 5 to 7 days. It's not just you on top. Like the little things that I'm like, the scientist in me is like, no, we have to understand the science of this. It's not just like, no, I was on top and I had my period. It's totally fine. Like, no, it's not. We got to talk about bodies, sperm, egg, they can meet still. So helping them understand the basics is super important too, which I think they're lacking on. But I think they have a more nuanced conversation around different relationships, identities, and accepting people's differences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I just saw this yet another poll that came out that said 25% of Gen Z people identify as non-binary. There have also been polls that have shown really high numbers of people who, when given a list of sexual identities, will check anything but straight. So they might check like mostly straight or, you know, or hetero flexible, right? There's all these new words to sort of capture the nuance. And so obviously the folks who are coming up right now do have much broader ideas about gender and sexuality than any previous generation has. But I agree with you that like there's some fundamentals that are missing still, which saddens me. I mean, it just speaks to the lack of sex education in our society. If someone doesn't know how they can and cannot get pregnant, I mean, we're talking, yeah, we're failing as a society then.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I want everyone to have that information because once you know the basics and have the foundational information, you can build and tailor make a lifestyle that works for you. But if you want to go into, let's go back to a couple of years when kink was super popular in the news, you can't just jump into kink. Like, that's like so dangerous. And I remember learning in grad school, like kink is one of the sexual grad schools because you can't just be like, you want to get kinky this weekend? Cool. And you just go drop a bunch of money at your local sex shop and you're tying up your partner with not the right kind of rope. You're taking your Yankee candle and burning your partner with third degree burns because it's the wrong kind of wax. Like, there's specific information and education you have to do these practices both safely, ethically, and as a good person. So it's just so important to have a good foundational base and then go explore. So I feel like people are getting a lot of like, I don't know, top view of sexuality, but they're missing the roots of the grass.
Right. I definitely feel like for me, workshops and presentations on kink that has increased since 50 Shades of Grey, but then it's remained at a kind of high that people that students really want to know about kink and they're really interested in it and they're talking a lot more about it. So I do think more and more people are exploring it or open to exploring it. And again, like if you just Google bondage, you're not going to necessarily come up with credible information, people.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I love the curiosity.
Right. It's like, it's great curiosity. And yes, the internet has amazing resources and also some really unreliable information.
Yeah. I always say, you know, trust your source, ask them their backstory, not necessarily saying they have to have a degree in this, but they can't have had a threesome once and then be like, oh yeah, I speak for all of sexuality. Like, no, what? No.
And I just want to shout out Scarlet Teen, which is scarletteen.org, which is one of the most comprehensive sex education sites on the web. It is geared towards teens and young people, but let me tell you, I consult it on the regular and I send people who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s to it simply because it's the best there is and the most reliable and the most inclusive on there. So I want to shout out if people are looking, if you're listening and saying, yeah, I'm curious, but where do I go besides Google? That's where I would send people. Do you have other sites that you love?
I love Scarlet Teen. And then I would just reference a bunch of Instagram accounts from other colleagues.
Oh, no. Tell me about those, too.
Me, obviously. My friend Gabrielle Castle, she is a writer. She makes amazing video content where she's explaining kink and non-binary and queer sexual life. She does a lot of toy reviews. Super awesome. Jessica O'Reilly, I love her so much. She's super
well. She's been on the show. Yeah, Sex with Dr. Jess is her handle.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Zachary Zane, I love the content he's putting out. He's a writer for Men's Health. And I really feel like he is boldly living a consensual non-monogamous life out loud and proudly. Also, he's bisexual. So I think it's a really interesting nuanced take on what it means to be a man, but also in the space. So I really love sending people his way too.
Yeah, no, he's also been on my show and he is like Mr. Adventure, let me tell you. He is up for anything, or at least he's up for all the things he then tells us about in his writing.
Yeah.
But I do think we need the emergence of some really strong bi male voices, which we haven't had. And I think that bi men, there's still bi men who are ambivalent or worried or in the closet or not out, and they need role models, right? So yeah. I think we need these more bi men's voices in the dialogue. Okay, so are you thinking about writing another book?
You know, I'm trying to make that food and sex book happen.
You still are. Okay. Yeah. You're still. Well, so what's the premise of the food and sex book?
I really don't know anymore. I mean, I want it to be like, you know, you enjoy sex with all five senses. Mm-hmm. You enjoy food with all five senses. So Absolutely. In my mind, there's a connection there. So maybe it's just a cookbook with sexual undertones, I don't know. I just love cooking. So I'm like, how can I tie these together?
Do you follow Luna Matadas has a Instagram called The Sensual Foodie?
Oh, I don't think I follow her, but I don't think I follow that one.
Got to get on that. Okay. It's really good. Yeah. And that makes me think of that made me think immediately when you said it, because I was like, that could be a book. Like her feed is super sexy. And I think the same thing. Like one of my, you know, great pleasures in life is sex. And one of my other great pleasures in life is food. It really is. And so the two kind of go hand in hand. And we're not talking about like necessarily the fetish, for example, of sploshing, which is like food and sex. That's a thing. But also just food as a complement to sex and sex as complement to food.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that someone jumps right on that for you. I really Hopefully. Do.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Kristen, thank you so much for having me. I mean, you are one of the icons I went to school following. I've got your books behind me. So it just feels really surreal to be on your podcast. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. The book is called Playing Without a Partner, A Single's Guide to Sex, Dating, and Happiness from Cleus Press. You can get it wherever you buy books. I especially encourage you to support local and independent bookstores. You can do that through bookshop.org. Not a paid endorsement, just me trying to send you to independent bookstores. You can find Megan at sexologistmegan.com and on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at sexologistmegan. I want to thank my engineer and editor, A-Rod, at FTC Designs. You can follow him on Twitter at FTC_designs. New episodes go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. You can find me across all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. And until next time, take some time to talk about sex out loud.